Welcome everybody to the War and Peace Baseball Podcast. It's episode 86 for Friday, September 22nd. I'm Alex Uy, and I'm here today with Alex Rudy. What's up, man?
How's it going?
Yep, and on today's podcast, we also have a special guest interview with Rohit Mogalayapalli, and he is the University of Michigan Sports Analytics Club president, and we are going to talk to him about all things sports analytics and baseball analytics and all that good stuff. We'll hear what he has to say, and we'll get to that interview shortly here, right after we get right into the swing of things. So, yeah, I figure we'll go ahead and talk about what's been going on recently in baseball before we get to this interview. We've got 11 days left. Can you believe it? 11 days of regular season baseball, and there's still so much that could happen. I wonder if there's any surprises left in the tank. Is there anything that you're absolutely dying to see before this regular season's up, Rudy? Because I know there's certainly some things that I am.
That's a great question. I'd be dying to see these wild card races go down to the wire, which it looks like they're going to, and we'll talk about that later. And then also, which we're going to get to eventually, is just I would love to see Stanton break 60 home runs and Judge break the rookie record just to cap off one of the best baseball seasons in history, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. If Aaron Judge can get that three true outcomes rookie record, I'd be super pumped. I'd be pumped about any more records that can be broken. Of course, the home run record was broken over the last few days, and we'll talk about that as well. We'll get to all of our stories after wild card games, Cy Young races, more records being broken, all of that. But first, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Rohit, and we'll talk about everything that we have going on there. So stick around, and we'll be right back here. Our guest today is Rohit Mogalayapalli. He is the president of the Michigan Sports Analytics Society. And thanks for being here. How are you today, Rohit?
Hey, Uy. I'm doing really well. How are you today?
Doing well, as usual. Ready to talk some sports analytics a little bit outside the realm of what we normally talk about in some ways. So why don't you go ahead and introduce the kind of work you do and sports analytics in general.
Yeah, so I'm a student at the University of Michigan, and I'm the president of the whole sports analytics initiative here at the university from the student perspective. And some of the work I do some work with women's soccer and providing accurate interpretations of data to their trainers and coaches and nutritionists alike. So that's kind of what I'm doing this semester. And I'm really excited for being able to talk about sports analytics today on this show.
Yeah, so I guess we'll start by throwing a few questions your way. I think it'd be a good thing to start with just for the casual fans out there. If you would give your elevator pitch, so to speak, and kind of explain what advanced analytics and advanced stats are, if you were to talk to somebody that didn't really have a good idea of that.
Yeah, so, sports has been around for a lot of years now, and there's, in the past century, tons of decisions have been made from the coaching perspective, from the front office, from gambling perspectives even. And what has happened in the last 30 years or so is this tech revolution has allowed us to collect much more data than we've ever been able to collect. And then on top of that, we have the platforms to do full-scale analysis on that data. So what sports analytics really is leveraging that data that's being collected to make even better decisions than what was already being made for the past 100 or so years. And that's really what sports analytics is, to aid a lot of the decision-making process that happens in sports.
Yeah, I in terms of front offices and all the decisions being made about you know, these teams' rosters and everything, that's essentially all because of what you guys were able to do. So, obviously, and, yeah, go ahead.
How do you see that play at the university level since you're involved? Obviously the Michigan soccer team, women's soccer team, and the Sports Analytics Society. How do you see at the university level sport analytics developing?
Yeah, you know, it's progressed really nicely at the university. So specifically, Michigan Athletics is very interested in using analytics to prevent injuries, you know, and monitor the workloads of their players and make sure they're producing, you know, optimally in terms of performance and keeping their bodies healthy, these types of things. And on top of that, you know, there have been researchers at the university that have dabbled in sports analytics, whether it's using machine learning to tag plays or, in the sense, Professor Weens, Jenna Weens, she did some research on tagging plays for NBA teams and tagging what type of pick and rolls occurred during a certain possession. So there's a lot going on, and it's really exciting to be part of this dynamic change at the university. And I'm really excited to be one of the leaders of it.
And it sounds like the university is pretty open to student involvement regarding sport analytics. Would you say from your experience that that's the case?
Yeah, they are very open, and they're really happy with what's going on. In fact, so Athletics signed a contract, I think, a year or two ago with Catapult Sports, which is a wearable devices company. And again, coming back to that tech revolution where this this device is monitored by satellites and has its own different instruments within the device that can give specific measurements related to the player that is wearing that device. And because of that, Athletics is very on board with, we have all this data, let's get it analyzed, let's do something with it, let's make it part of research at this university, let's allow students to partake and make it somewhat of an academic session. And we're really excited for that as students. You know, we like to see Athletics taking us under their wings and allowing us to help out as best we can.
And so where do you see then the future growth and the direction of the industry at, both at from our perspective as current students and, you know, at our universities and our involvement in the universities, and then maybe just in general overall in the sport industry as a whole?
Yeah, so that's an interesting question because there's obviously a lot of growth for sports analytics. And I think the direction of the industry is right now, I think, specifically research-based. I think the type of information we get, we're not yet at a point where it can all be used to facilitate every decision that's made or to change the way decisions are made. I think we're at a point where we still need to research the theories and back them up. And from there, you know, I think there will be a natural progression where coaches, general managers, and even players will start to realize, hey, like, I can use this this data, this analytics to create better opportunity for myself. And I think that's like anything. It's no different than players starting to lift weights. It's something that can aid their careers and help them, you know, make better decisions.
Yeah, and I think the widespread acceptance and integration is really a positive sign. You know, even if there's a lot of work to do, people are on board and they understand how valuable it is. I kind of want to shift gears here a little bit more specifically towards baseball, because that's what we're all excited to hear about over here. And more about the growth in that industry specifically. So what kind of, you know, future growth can we see specifically with baseball analytics in your mind?
Yeah, so baseball is an interesting sport because it is much more static than a lot of the other American sports. So actually, analytics has grown fast in baseball, whether it's our money ball, you know, a lot of the hitting statistics or the fielding statistics. There's a lot out there already. One of the things that I think baseball could use is tracking the ball and tracking the ball from when it leaves the pitcher's hand to the catcher's mitt. And I think there could be some advantages there of analyzing that data and providing it to hitters, and really giving hitters an idea of how the ball will come at them. And the same thing for pitchers, you know. How is the ball coming out of their hands? Is it different than it was 5 years ago? What has changed? Is it worse? Is it better? You know, I think there's a lot of room for that, and could really impact player performance specifically. So, you know, I hope to see some research soon about that. I've seen some, but hope to see more complete research in that. And I think that could be really advantageous for hitters and pitchers alike.
Yeah.
I think it's really... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to, like, everything that you're describing is kind of sounds like the end game of what the StatCast project with MLB really is aiming to become. Like, you can track really precisely the ball leaving the hand, how the ball moves, the spin rates to very precise levels, you know, how the conditions of the environment affect the ball. So basically giving, spoon-feeding hitters and pitchers any amount of data they can possibly have. What were you going to say, Rudy?
I was just also going to bring up the StatCast point, but from the perspective of accuracy, because I know it's been a big issue so far. The exact measurement's accuracy, a lot of people have been critical of it. And I think mostly regarding home runs and kind of more the subjective grading system to it. But I'd be really interested to see it applied to pitching, because, first of all, it's a much smaller distance to be covered, and it's a lot more predictable in the trajectory of the ball, obviously, because it's being caught and thrown in a limited viewpoint. But I think that data would be extremely valuable for the game, 100%. I think I'm really surprised it honestly wasn't where they started, to be quite honest, now that you bring it up, Rohit.
Yeah, I think, you know, players can be concerned about that type of stuff, because I'm sure there will be trends, especially along the lines of top pitchers, where the ball is coming at a certain angle where it's a bit different than other pitchers. And I think there is some pushback there, which is fine. I think it takes time for things like these to grow, because they give competitive advantages to different people. And I think players are concerned that it could hurt them more than it could help them. But we'll see. I think the data is being collected. It's just not open for analysis yet. And I think that's where there's room for growth. And I think if the data is collected for 5 years over a period of time, I think people will be like, oh, let's go back and look at it. Let's see, like, was there anything that we could explain? Could we explain, you know, a pitcher deteriorating? Could we explain why so-and-so was not pitching well on this day? And could we explain how, you know, one hitter was not able to hit a certain type of pitch? There's these things that I think there's room for growth, and I'm excited for that, for the next step for baseball.
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned earlier about, you know, tracking the ball, and, you know, the way StatCast does it is with, you know, like laser technology, essentially. I don't know if this is what you're getting at earlier, but do you think there's any merit to using technology within the ball to track that kind of stuff, or even out, like, in other sports as well? I mean, do you think there's any potential that we see that at some point down the line, some sort of technology that's attached or within the ball that's being used on the playing field to kind of track what's going on? I imagine that would be more accurate, but I have no idea. I don't think I've really heard that tossed around.
Yes.
Now, but have you?
So the sports that I have experience with, everything has with relation to the ball is cameras. So basketball deploys cameras, soccer deploys cameras, baseball deploys cameras. None of them, or lasers in this case, none of them put anything in the ball. And I think, you know, there could be a variety of reasons for that. Obviously, you know, we are not as sure of what needs to be put in the ball. If it's just a small chip, then maybe, yeah. But if it's much bigger than that, then obviously that could affect the game to a large extent. But, yeah. You know, I think realistically the best way to go is cameras. I think analyzing from outside the lines and getting the data from outside the lines rather than putting something in play where it could possibly affect the game is something that I would, you know, stray against. Although football, you know, football does put the wearable devices on each shoulder pad. But
I didn't know that was a thing either. That's cool.
Yeah, so so they signed a contract with Zebra, and if you ever seen like the next gen stats or all that stuff, so that's actually just a chip in each shoulder pad. So that's how they collect the, you know, the maximum speed of so and so, or like Tyreek Hill or whomever is a really fast football player. That's how they do it. They put it in the shoulder pad, but that's a very negligible, you know, piece of object. So
yeah, I imagine it'd be a complete logistical nightmare trying to put chips inside of baseballs, considering how many baseballs are used throughout the course of the season. It might make a little more sense than some other sports like football, where you don't go through quite as many balls, or basketball. I have no idea. I'm sure there's a reason we don't do it already, and it's probably because it's insanely difficult. But that would be something that'd be fun to see down the line.
So,
Rudy, did you have anything else to add on this before
I think
on, or you?
No, but I think it's actually a really good transition to. So, what is your opinion on these statistics and how to kind of teach them to the average fan and how they can understand them? Because I think we've all probably spent a lot of our time learning about these statistics and reading up about them on our own and studying it. And obviously you do research, Rohit, so you're even way ahead of us on that planet. But the average fan, I don't think, really spends as much of their free time just on Baseball Reference or FanGraphs or all these assorted other websites read up on these mathematical analysis. So how do you think it's possible to combine the casual fan with advanced analytics?
You know, I think it is possible. Obviously, if we tell a fan to just go learn because it's important, I think that's the wrong way to go. I think first there has to be an interest from, you know, ESPN or these types of major networks, because in reality, the way people learn sports now is through just watching TV, watching continuous broadcasts of sports and listening to the commentators speak. And I think that next step is now allowing or having ESPN present some of the analytics that's going on in games and doing it on a continuous basis. And I think that's the best way for a fan to learn sports analytics, is if ESPN and these companies will take it upon themselves to say, hey, this is important to the game, and we want to show it to our fans. So, you know, that's something that, you know, it has to be provided to the fans. I don't think it's something where we can just tell the fans, hey, go out and learn it because it's important. Yeah. Does that make sense a little bit?
100%, I think that's an outlook that I think we would all agree with is probably the best way to look at it. Because not every person, obviously, is just going to be super willing or invested in independent research.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm all for the have everything possible, and then, you know, people can access it if they want to. They can go as deep into their research and their interest as they like, as long as all the information is there. I'm all good. So yeah, I think that's a good way to go there. And you know, obviously, with the overwhelming amount of data and stats that are available nowadays, it's kind of transitioning a little bit away from traditional scouting and, you know, the eye test, so to speak, when you're evaluating athletes. And obviously scouting departments are still really big, but now they kind of work hand in hand with analytics. And do you think there's any sort of clash between traditional scouting and the eye test and, you know, more modern analytics, or do you think they're able to get along just fine?
Yeah, so as it relates to scouting, you bring up some interesting points. I think, I kind of talked about this at the top, is that really stats and analytics should be used to make efficient decisions, make better decisions. And what that means is you can rule out a lot of players just by using analytics and save a lot of time for your scouts to then scout the players you know fit your metrics or fit the build that you're looking for. And I think that's where analytics and stats can be used. But also, again, it should facilitate the eye test. The eye test is important, especially because that's attractive to fans. If a player meets the eye test, is lovable on the field, plays the game in a fun manner, that's money for teams, right? That's marketing. That's a lot of things for teams. And I think that part's important too. And obviously winning is important as well. And managers and coaches alike, they do like their teams built a certain way because they believe that's the best way to win. And until proven otherwise statistically or analytically, I think it's best in our best interest to continue to use the eye test when making final decisions.
Do you think eventually we'll reach a stage where the eye test can be completely discounted with mathematical analysis essentially, or do you think it's an inherent part of sports that some things just can't be necessarily, I don't want to say explained, but I guess like maybe proven with facts, and some things are just part of the human element, and no matter how many algorithms or equations you run, they can't be fully understood that way?
Yeah, so again, that's a very interesting question, and it's a tough question to answer. I think if we think about sports like football or basketball, where the decisions that are made are very instinctual and it's split seconds, I think the eye test has to be used for a lot of things. I think stats and analytics cannot tell you how hard a player can hit or how much fear he puts into an opposing team. And likewise, a running back putting fear into opposing defenses or coaches. And I think there's no analytics for that, which is why I believe the eye test is still and should continue to be important, because when players are in game, every decision that's made is very instinctual, and it's not analytic-based. It's going to be what's in front of them. And if they are scared with what's in front of them, and you can see that, that's something that has to be analyzed through the eye test. And it's not something that can be quantified by any analytics out there.
Yeah,
definitely.
The term that, I think most baseball fans specifically hear a lot are, they have a feel for the game. They're baseball savvy. They know what they're doing out there. It's things that you can't really track quite the same. Like the intangible elements of, their work ethic and, their split-second decision-making and just their, the way that their individuality affects their play. I think that's always going to leave the door open for, for scouts to have, a good place to work with. That's going to be a crucial part, even with all this new data.
So I think that what this all kind of gets at, and I think, is that context is crucial and key. I think that a lot of people aren't open to sport analytics. They don't want to believe that you need context in cooperation with the mathematical analysis. They like to construe that it's one or the other. And I think what this conversation has kind of been all centered around about is that you can't just be all in on one thing or another. It all comes together to create proper analysis, and it's not just a simple, step by step, like 1, 2, 3 step process. But bearing that in mind, is there one thing that you think should be changed regarding the relationship between analytics and the game? I think especially considering that I don't think we've reached a stage where the two have completely joined in unison in every sport, at least.
Yeah, and I think you outlined it. I think the first step is definitely being on the same page and having that unity where decisions are made with both, with a lot of factors taken into account, and one of those factors being the analytics, but also the eye test and however past decisions have been made. I think that's one change that needs to happen. And I think the other change that needs to take place is professional teams need to, you know, understand the type of questions or understand analytics, right? What does the analytics mean? And I think that gets lost in all of this because a lot of teams just think, oh, like if we bring in an analyst, he will solve our money ball problem or he'll prove that this player is better than that. And a lot of times that's not how it works. Again, analytics should be used to facilitate how decisions are made and what decisions are made. But they should not be the be-all, end-all and prove that, okay, this is for sure true. You know, so that's kind of where I see it. I think a proper understanding of analytics from, you know, coaches, general managers, players even, needs to take place. And then once that happens, I think there will be better unison between people who analyze data and people who could possibly use that data to make constructive decisions.
Yeah, I completely agree there. And I think that's, you know, a good place to kind of wrap up our discussion. So, you know, thank you again, Rohit, for joining us. I definitely learned a lot. I hope, you know, whoever's listening to this learned a lot as well. And yeah, is there anything else that you want to mention here before we wrap things up? Anything you want to plug? You want to get any fans out there interested in any other analytics societies or, you know,
quick shout out?
Yeah, give yourself a shout out.
That's a good question. I didn't think about that before coming on, but no, I'm just happy to be on and talk some sports analytics. I'm glad I talked to Rudy about this and really got this idea going. In terms of shout outs, you know, I don't know, shout out to Novi, Michigan. That's where I'm from. I'm very proud of where I'm from, and that's about it, really. Whoever's listening, if you know me, say hi to me. Let me know that you listen to this, and I'd love to talk about it some more. So thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thank absolutely. You. Thanks again. All right. Take care.
All right.
All right, we're back with just me and Rudy here. Again, I'd like to thank Rohit for joining us. It was a pretty good interview, if I do say so myself. I learned plenty from that. So, without further ado, we'll go ahead and get to the rest of our show, and we'll give you the news.
I've got to do the news!
All right, so as we mentioned earlier, home run record is destroyed. We've been watching it for a while, and we have a new single-season MLB home run record. So that's for all teams combined, the whole entire league, throughout the course of the entire season. No season's ever had more. The record was 5,694, and it is now more than that, because Alex Gordon hit the 5,695th on Tuesday, I believe it was, correct? Tuesday
that is
or Wednesday?
Correct.
Yeah, we're good.
Tuesday.
All right. So now there's a lot more. I don't know the exact number, but there's still 11 days left. So I wonder where this number is going to land. I wonder if we'll break 6,000. Do you think we got 6,000 in the bag, or what do you think?
Yeah, I'd say. Oof, what is that? So it's about 300 home runs with 11 games.
Yeah,
a little bit less. I don't think that's going to happen.
You don't think so? I think we can do
you
it
think so?
Because if we hit like, think of it like if we
there's
do
15 games a day, so if there's a home run every game,
yeah, which is not a rare thing, really. You know, there's.
Let's do the math.
All right, we're gonna do on air math. This could go very.
Let's
quickly,
do the math
very quickly.
Thing.
This is what we're all about. We're all about stats and analytics, right? This is.
That's 165. So I think it's. You need basically two a game. I don't think that's. Or one and a half, I guess, technically.
Well, it is
but
less than 300. Let me look up the exact number right now, because there's been a
you're right.
Since then.
I think it's doable. I don't know if it's likely, but I think I've said that a million times this season, and it's always been done. So if I was to guess, I would say it's probably going to happen. I think that would be insane, and I think that fully supports my overarching belief in the god of the juice ball, which is the only true religion in my world at the moment.
There is no God. It's just the juiced balls. That's all it is, right? Everybody wants to believe this whole season's a hoax. And that,
those damn seams.
Those raised seams and orange juice injected balls. It's all madness. But, you know, I think we're forgetting the fact that Stanton is going to be visiting Coors Field, so he might, you know, have 150 or so in that one series, if we're lucky. So I think that's a fair bet right there. I guess that's a good way to just mention Stanton's at 56 homers now, and he needs four more to reach 60, and ideally we want to see him get more than that.
Do you think Judge and Stanton's going to reach 60 and Judge is going to break the record? You would bet your money on those two things happening?
If I had to say both happen, I would be a little more skeptical, because that's just, you know, four home runs in 11 days, even for these guys, is like, it's a pretty good stretch right there. And I don't know. I like Stanton's chances a lot more with him going to Arizona and then Coors Field, and then, you know, Judge is basically at Yankee Stadium all of next week. I think he's in Toronto for this weekend series. But, yeah, I'm going to say Stanton if I had to pick one to actually realistically happen. But I'd absolutely love to see Aaron Judge do it down to the wire, as you said before. So we'll talk about all the wild card matchups, both AL and NL, because there's not, you know, too much left to talk about. A lot of teams have been basically cut out of this race altogether. In the American League, the only teams that are really in it still are, well, the Yankees are holding that number one spot. They widen that gap.
I think it's pretty much guaranteed the Yankees are going to get that first spot at this point. Bearing an unforeseen collapse, they're playing super well right now. Mm-hmm. They just destroyed the Twins, like you just said. Swept them, in fact. But I think the second wild card spot in the AL is much more interesting at the moment. The Twins and the Angels look like to be the number one contenders, and it looks like it can come down pretty much close to the end of the season. The Twins still have a pretty decent lead, like I would say. It's not huge, but it's still there. What do you think? If you had to bet money on which team, which one are you taking? This is a good betting episode. It's going to be the bet money episode.
Well, yeah, here's the deal. If I'm a betting man, I'm a man who's doing his research too, and I have to look at the matchups for the next week. There's like 11 days left. I already said this. There's three series left, basically, for all these teams. The Angels are going to be hosting the Astros first this weekend, and then got the White Sox on the road in the middle of the week, and then the weekend series for the Angels is going to be at home against the Mariners. So not too difficult to schedule right there. So, I mean, the Twins have a pretty easy time as well. I guess, you know, working in the same, you know, orientation, I'll go ahead and list off again. So this weekend upcoming here, they are going to be taking on the Tigers, and they're actually going to be playing the Tigers again next weekend at home. So they got two Tigers series left. And then during the week, they're going to be squaring off against the... I should probably have had that ready. They're going up against the Indians, who are already basically clinched. So I'm going to go ahead and say that the tough matchups against these really dominant teams in this last week, not going to be so tough, because it's going to be a totally different team when it gets down to it. It's going to be a lot of not everyday players playing. So if your team is going up against the Dodgers or the Nationals, that might be a good thing in this last week. You should feel good about that. But yeah, based on those schedules, I definitely like the Twins to take it. Just because they have the Tigers twice.
I think that would be the first time a last-place team makes the playoffs next year. No, a 100-loss team, I believe, is will make the playoffs the next season in baseball history.
That would be something.
Correct? I'm pretty sure.
I have no idea, honestly.
I think what's most interesting... What is most interesting about this season... Yeah, they lost 103 games last year. So I'm pretty positive that's going to be the first time a team lost 100 games the season before and then made the playoffs. But I think the fact that the Rangers are still technically 2.5 games back when they traded away Yu Darvish and pretty much have given up on the season for a couple months now is very interesting. I think the second wild card might need some tweaking based on how the ALs were playing out, because I'm gonna be honest with you, man. If the Yankees lose that game, I'm gonna be pretty damn pissed, because they have a 7-game lead on the Twins, and it just makes no sense to me that a team with 7 more wins should just be eliminated after 1 game by a significantly worse team.
Yeah.
7 games is a lot in baseball. That's kind of, they might have to tweak that and make it into a 2-game, 3-game series type of thing in the future. I saw an article on Fangraphs about that today. I think it's an interesting idea.
I would definitely love to see a 3-game wild card series, but you know, well, right now we got the single game playoff, and that's just what we got to deal with. But the Rangers really shouldn't be discounted either, I guess, because they also play the A's this weekend and next weekend. I don't know why so many teams are doing that in the last week or so, and then in the middle of the week they play the Astros. That's interesting. It's tough because with basically no head-to-head matchups between these wild card contending teams in the AL, it's going to be hard to leapfrog. It's going to be really variable. And that's kind of the opposite in the NL, which we'll get to in a second. I think the Rangers definitely have a chance still because of this easy schedule, but you have to bank on the Twins and Angels losing. Like, they can't take anything into their own hands, you know? They just have to take care of their business and hope the other teams can't. I still don't see them being the choice to make the wild card over the Twins. And then the Royals are still sitting 3.5 back, a couple teams at 4 back. But like I said, no head-to-head matchups. The Royals have the White Sox this weekend, and then Tigers during the week, and then the weekend series against the Diamondbacks. So that last series is going to be tough for them. You know, it's just such a screwy schedule with no head-to-head matchups, like I said. So I'm going to go ahead and stick with the Twins for this one. It's kind of amazing that I'm at this point in the season saying that the Twins are looking like the favorites for the second wild card spot. I still can't believe it. Anything else in the AL before we talk about the NL real quick?
No, I think the playoffs, though, are going to be excellent in the AL. I think, except for the Twins, as long as the Yankees win, these four teams are not necessarily all even, but close. And I think any of those teams can go to the World Series, in my opinion.
Hey, Yankees can still... Oh, never mind. The Boston clinched the East, or they clinched a berth?
They clinched the berth.
Yankees can still chase down that AL East, so maybe...
Not impossible.
Maybe Yankees won't... It's only 3 games, right? It's not that insane. So we'll be keeping our eye on the AL. And then on the NL side of things, I'm going to be spewing a lot of matchups at you again because it's really important. So the most important matchup, I think, is this weekend, which is already starting as of recording today on Thursday. The Cubs and Brewers square up for 4 games at Miller Park. That's going to be a huge one because right now in the division, they are only separated by 3.5 games. So if the Brewers somehow manage a sweep of the Cubs, they would take the lead just from this weekend. If they can make up any ground this weekend by winning the series, that would be big for them. And then, you know, in the wild card in that NL, Milwaukee's only 1 game back, so they need to do a lot of winning as well. And Colorado's been wavering lately. Not sure if they're going to be able to hang in there. Arizona has a pretty decent lead, kind of like the Yankees. I don't think there's any controversy there. Do you think the Brewers have a legit shot at this wild card game? Do you think they're going to leapfrog the Rockies? Because the Rockies are looking really weak right now.
I think they're a legit shot at making the playoffs, without a doubt, absolutely.
The Cubs are going to be a tricky team to leapfrog. They have to really win big this weekend.
Yeah, I don't think the division is really realistic at the moment. If the Cardinals sweep them, because they're playing the Cubs, like you said, and the Brewers stay hot, it's possible, but I wouldn't bet money on it. Leapfrogging. The Rockies one game is not, it means nothing in my opinion. I know I considered the Angels' 1.5 game lead behind the Twins as nothing too, but both those teams are 4 and, I mean, it's a lot, I said that was significant, but both those teams are 4-6 in their last 10. The Rockies are not playing well, very well at the moment. The Brewers are, and I would love to see both the Brewers and the Twins as like terrible stinking teams last year with no expectations this year make the playoffs and then just get destroyed in the wild card round. I think that
you're pretty, like, as long as they don't beat one of the teams that deserves to be there, you're like,
seeing no NL team being the Diamondbacks that game. Maybe the Cardinals, tiny chance because of the Cardinals and they're amazing in the playoffs. But I don't know about you. I think anything can happen in one game, but I would still be, there'd be huge upsets either way.
Yeah. Cardinals are a sneaky team right here, sitting 2.5 back right now. They kind of struggle because they don't have really head to head matchups against any of these teams, but they're playing the Pirates this weekend, which the Pirates are not a very good team. Then they are during the week going to be playing the, I had it here. Where is it? They are playing the Cubs. Actually, what am I saying? They do have a head-to-head matchup. Not for their wild card, but the Cubs and Cardinals are going to be playing a series in the middle of the week. And then their final series for the Cardinals is going to be against the Brewers. I'm very wrong. They have a lot of head-to-head matchups here. I don't know what I was saying earlier. The Cardinals can definitely come in and, take down the Brewers, take over the Rockies and get into that wild card. And I think there's still an off chance that they can win the division, right? Is that
yeah,
right? Because they play...
It's mathematically possible.
They're 5 games back right now, and they play the Cubs and the Brewers in that stretch. So if a lot of things go right for the Cardinals and things go really poorly for the Cubs and Brewers, the Cardinals can definitely take things into their own hands. So that's... I'm definitely going to be watching some Cardinals games this week, I guess. I guess that's what I'm doing now. The voodoo magic will reign again. Let's see if they can do some leapfrocking.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be confused with leapfrocking, which is an aggressive oil mining tactic, but that's not relevant.
It's on the War and Peace Environmental Podcast.
Yeah, totally different show. You can check it out. The link is not in the description below. I think that's pretty much all we have to say about the wild card. Tons of good series to watch this last week. Really relevant baseball. Just one more time, it's really worth mentioning that these teams that are playing for their playoff lives are playing such different baseball than the teams that are either way out of it or already in the playoffs. Like, you're going to see some crazy, stupid lineups from teams like the Dodgers or the Tigers, like on either side of the spectrum, that are just going to be laughable. So if your team is in the wild card hunt and they're matched up against one of these teams, that's like a really good thing. So, I'm going to be watching the games that are between wild card competitors because those are going to be the fun games to watch.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So let's continue on here and talk a little bit about the Cy Young race. Chris Sale made things more interesting by basically dominating the Orioles. There's no other way to put it. 13 strikeouts in 8 scoreless innings for him, and that's really big because he'd been kind of scuffling the last few starts while Kluber's been rolling. Chris Sale has reached 300 Ks, and that's a big deal. So these numbers between Chris Sale and Corey Kluber have been really close all year, and it's not helping now that they're both pitching so well going into the playoffs. Which pitcher looks like the front runner right now? Because there is no clear answer. There's no right answer, you could say. Well, who do you have right now?
Ooh, this is tough. It is the reverse, absolute reverse of last year's race, where it seemed like anyone could win it in the AL. Now it seems 100% that it's between one of these two guys. I think the standard easy way to look at it would be like, oh, Chris Sale got 300 strikeouts, so he deserves to win, and just end it there. But I think that's just oversimplifying it because
I think
if you take away strikeouts, you can make the case then that, Kluber's the better pitcher. He's the better ERA. He's the better WHIP. So I'm going to go with Kluber, better batting average against, because I think there's more to being a pitcher than just strikeouts, and I think strikeouts are crucial to your effectiveness. There's no doubt about it, but, like, ultimately, I guess, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, and maybe you disagree with this philosophy, but, like, when you're just driving a Cy Young, like you know, a strikeout is just an out. So if a pitcher is better than you at getting outs and gives up less runs than you, then I don't think you just getting more strikeouts makes up for that. And that's not to say that they're not absurdly close pitchers in ability and skill and both having Cy Young deserving seasons. But I'm going to probably have to go with Kluber, who is slightly just more overall effective, even though Sale has the more impressive singular stat. Though I will admit Sale also has a lower FIP. So and a lower home run to fly ball rate. So it comes down to the wire. I'm gonna go with Kluber, but feel free to disagree.
Well, I'm gonna offer the counterpoints, and I still haven't made up my mind because it's just impossible. But you know, people want to argue. I'm gonna refute this right now. The biggest argument against Kluber is that he missed time and his workload is less than Sale's. It's true, but it's almost negligible because
it's 20
they
innings.
Are less than 20 innings separated.
Yeah.
And that's like less. That's like three starts maybe, right? Three good starts from either of these guys.
Which that's then if you make the case that Kluber had those starts, how their strikeout totals would be pretty damn close,
well,
right?
That's 50. No, 50 strikeouts is a huge gap as well. Kluber's at like 250.
But there would be a lot closer though. I mean, literally, there'd be within five. But you could probably assume that he would add another like at least 20 in those games.
Yeah.
And then that's only a 30 strikeout difference. I don't think that's enough to ever really judge. And I think you can. I think that's a really interesting point. I think three games is like way too little to make the case that he didn't play enough to be on the same level.
Yeah, and you know, like even when you're getting down to the nitty gritty details of like their environments, both have Gold Glove defenses behind them. Both of them have really obviously on really good teams that got them the wins that make their records look really shiny and nice. Both at 17 right now. Yeah, and Kluber's been, you know. I'm not going to say that it's insignificant. Kluber has like a 0.1 better whip than Sale, which is saying a lot considering Sale's whip is 0.95. Like, Kluber has been extraordinary this year with a lower ERA too. ERA, I don't really like to use ERA. But I think Kluber does have the better case here because, like you said, strikeouts are important. They're a big deal. But the way that advanced metrics rate them are significantly more than I think how they should be rated. They're like strikeouts are basically the entirety of a pitcher's like underlying numbers, basically. So I think it has to be Kluber at this point, just because, like, if you think about it this way, it looks like such a small difference in WHIP and ERA, but if you looked at a guy having a season. Like, a difference between a 1.1 whip and a 1.2 whip. That seems like a huge difference, doesn't it? Or like a 3.5 ERA versus a 4 ERA. That's a big difference, and that's basically the same size gap that these guys have in both places.
It's a great way to put it. I like that a lot. It's a great point. Like, I think you can go with Sale. You wouldn't be wrong, but I think Kluber is a slight edge. But I think ultimately it has to be a subjective decision because it really comes down to which statistics you value more.
Yeah.
When analyzing a pitcher.
I will say I'm not really going to value anything that happens in this last start at all. Like, each of them are essentially going to make one more start. It's going to be a start going into the playoffs, basically going to limit them to just give them their innings. And I am not going to evaluate their seasons at all based on these final starts for them. Do you agree, or do you think that they're pitching for their Cy Young this next start?
I don't really think so, unless they get bombed. I mean, the Sale's also gone bombed multiple times this year. I think that should not be discounted. I don't really know Kluber as well because he's not in AL East.
I'll scroll through the game logs, but
I know for a fact Sale's been bombed like four or five times. And I think when it's this close, you should definitely take into account that this guy's had games where he's just been destroyed. Whereas, you know, maybe like giving up three runs in six innings and like eight 10 straight spots is equivalent to that in the overall ERA, but they're much different games that you're actually pitching, and the performances are drastically different.
Mm-hmm. In April, Corey Kluber was not fantastic. He had a couple starts where he gave up 5 and 6 earned runs. But other than that, he hasn't given up more than...
He gave up 5 and 6 for the most this year in April.
Whereas, and he hasn't given up more than 4 since then, since like April 15th.
Chris Sale has given up 7, 5... That's earned runs. Let's see. He's given up 7, 5, 6, and 2 of those were very recent starts.
Well, essentially, the stat we're looking at there is just quality starts then, right? Like,
I think that matters.
For the most part, yeah. Just like the quantity. Chris Sale has 23 this year, and Kluber has... One second. This is what I get for doing research on the fly. But what else is new, right? Kluber has 21, but that's partially because of quantity, too. Like, you mentioned, like, a couple more starts in there, they'd be essentially the same. So, that's the deal. So, you know, you can pick whoever you want. You won't be wrong. I'm personally not looking at this last matchup at all. But, you know, good luck to them. We've come a long way since Verlander versus Porcello, haven't we? It's
Hell
amazing.
Yeah. Porcello's having an atrocious year.
I think he leads the league in runs allowed, right?
Yep.
Awesome. How the mighty have fallen. Not that he was ever really considered mighty. Let's go ahead and talk about a few more records that were broken, because tis the season to be breaking records the last couple weeks of the season here. Mike Moustakas officially broke the Royals' all-time single-season home run record with 37 now, which is, you know, not a super impressive franchise record, but it's his. And hopefully he can tack on a few more, maybe get the first 40 home run performance by a Royal. He was definitely on pace to do that at some point this season. Hopefully he can get there. Moustakas. It's, you know, the Royals just haven't had any power hitters before, so I guess this is the right time to do it, right? Yeah. So, all right.
I think it just says the most, but I think this says so much about the Royals more than anything.
Yeah.
Honestly.
It's just kind of sad. Like, there's tons of players with, I mean tons, there's some players with 40 homers already, and it's just, we shake it off, and then for Moustakas to get 37, it's a huge deal. Kind of funny. Trey Turner, also doing some record breaking. He is the National single season stolen base record holder, not the National League, the Nationals. I confused Rudy by my wording earlier. The Washington National single season stolen base record, with 42 stolen bases so far, and counting, and just 89 games also so far, I might add. So I want to see Trey Turner cut loose for the entire season, just steal 100 bases and score like 200 runs. Trey Turner, you could do it. You were my MVP pick this year, and you got injured, but next year's your year. I'm sticking with you. Don't worry. Come on. How can you not like Trey Turner, though, at this point?
I cannot wait to see him next year healthy for an entire season, and the Nationals are going to be disgusting in the playoffs now that they're fully healthy. That wasn't necessarily a guarantee that all these guys would come back and hit their stride, but they're the dark horse, I think, to win it all right now.
Well, not quite fully healthy. Rest in peace, Adam Eaton. We will not
Okay, well, he obviously was not going to come back for the playoffs, so my mistake.
Yeah, well, apparently his rehab's going well, though, so that's good. Not that it matters much.
Victor Robles will guide them to victory, no worries.
Oh man, he is good. That kid is good. I'm ready for more Victor Robles. So, yeah, I think that's basically all we've got. I mean, in those last 11 days of the season, there's a lot that can still happen. But, you know, we're running out of time. We need more time for all these amazing things to happen. So we're still looking for 6,000 homers. We're still looking for, Stanton and Judge to hit their homers and break some records. And we're also still waiting for Mike Trout to qualify for the batting title, like, as a qualified hitter. And once he does, he's projected to this. He's, like, on pace to in these last few days. He will definitely insert himself near the top of pretty much every category of these leaderboards. So watch out for that. Mike Trout will appear on your stat radar soon yet again. I think he's... very definitively still the best player in baseball. So no news there, really. But that's all I got. Anything else that you want to add news-wise, Rudy, before we wrap up?
I can't believe this is true, but it makes perfect sense. Mike Trout's never won a playoff game. So as much as I was touting the Twins, it would be nice to finally see the greatest player in the sport win a fucking playoff game already.
Well, if it's going to be against our Yankees, then I'm going to feel very conflicted.
You're right.
That.
All right. No, never mind, Mike
Next
Trout.
Next year.
Sorry,
you can wait a year, Mike Trout. You can Next definitely year. Wait a year. Aaron Judge can have the stage for now, and Mike Trout will just continue in infamy for playing for an awful team. The narrative will continue. The Angels are wasting Mike Trout. Her, her, her. All that nonsense. I mean, it's not nonsense. It's true, but it's, yeah. Whatever. Mike Trout, we wish you the best, just not this year, I guess. So, yeah, that's all we got for today. So, thanks for joining us. I hope you enjoyed our little guest interview that we had. We don't really do a lot of those. We want to start doing more of those. If you have, you know, anything to contribute and you want to give us any feedback, it is very much appreciated. You can do so by tweeting us at WPB_podcast. You can check out our Facebook page, which will be linked below as well. Email warandpeacebaseball@gmail.com. You can check out our website, which the link for that is down below as well. We got all our podcasts, new articles out there as well. Especially in the off season, hopefully we'll be writing some more articles. And yeah, anything else? I think we're all good here. Next week will be another normal schedule, but it's the last week of the regular season. So when it's playoff time, obviously we're not really going to be doing fantasy baseball conversations, so we'll probably be switching back to once a week format. Yeah, unless there's like really important things that are happening, we'll play it by ear throughout the playoffs. Be on the lookout for any new podcast that we're turning out then. And then in the off season, who knows? We'll try to get you all the news and everything that we can. And you know, I'm kind of ready for the off season, because I feel like we do some of our best work on the podcast anyway. Even though there's no baseball to watch, I think we'll survive it okay, right? Feeling good? All right. Let's go ahead and end it off here. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. So, yeah, as always, Rudy.
Peace.